All right.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Yeah! 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 Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on GearFolkRadio.com.
You're damn right I ain't done stomping on snakes. You know what happens to snake handlers, right? They get bit and they get immune to the snake bites, right? So you can stomp on those snakes and they won't hurt you because you're immune to their venom, right?
I just went through something with some poisonous stings.
Oh, really? So but you know not, what I'm
not
talking about.
Not Jews, just...
Not Jew poison, snake poison.
I'll explain later.
Okay, all right. But last week, now there's a follow-up show to last week's topic. Last week's topic was how the Jews orchestrated the Versailles Treaty and basically blame Germany for all of the violence that occurred when it wasn't Germany's fault at all. And we document how the Jews instituted, every country was represented by Jews, and the Jews themselves had a Zionist group that was also represented. So virtually every country had a Zionist representing it, plus the Zionists themselves had an independent group represented at Versailles. David, does it sound like this was a Jewish treaty?
Yes, but I'm not sure how they got a hold of this. I'm not sure how they wielded this kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
This was an international council, by the way, and I'm going to show you something that's going to blow you away.
Okay.
So I've never read the Treaty of Versailles. So I went out and I started looking for it on PDF, and you get these things where you just get partials of it.
Sure.
But I finally found the original one, and I'm going to blow you away because
okay.
I don't think – I mean, I'm not sure nobody has said this before, but I don't know if anyone's taken the time to read the treaty. Wait till I show you something in a little while. You're going to freak out when you see this.
Well, it's just one of those blacklisted episodes of history because that treaty is so despicable, so unfair to the German people, so brutal to the German people – that it hardly qualifies as a peace. That's why today's subject, the topic, is the Versailles Treaty, history's most terrifying peace. Okay?
And they didn't even lose.
No,
they didn't even lose the war.
No, they signed an armistice with the intention of, spelling out terms later. But in the meantime, the Jews tried to overthrow the country with a communist revolution. Okay? And so before spelling out the terms with the Kaiser abdicated and fled to, I think it was Belgium, because he didn't want to be murdered like the Tsar of Russia was murdered. And so the country was in Jewish hands right from the get-go. Okay.
Amazing. Amazing how they're able to do these coups while the war is going on. I never knew this. I never really thought about it. That's the thing. Last week I told you that it's a 5-year period, 4 years of the war and the 1 year to set it up in 1913. This is all done. The Armenian genocide, everything is done right through 1918, from 13 to 18. And they're able to pull off the Bolshevik Revolution right near the end of the war while everyone's concentrating on the war.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't realize that it was just this 5-year period. No, who talks about these things anyway?
Nobody.
You know what I mean?
Nobody
talks about these things.
No, because the Versailles Treaty was so unjust that it's an embarrassment for historians to even talk about it. That's a total embarrassment. Plus, if they talk about it, they have to talk about the Jews who created it, who deliberately created it. There's the ridiculous Balkanization of Europe. Okay.
Well, it's going to get worse when I show you what I show you.
Yeah. Okay,
you're
going to
freak out. I mean, I freaked out when I saw this. I can't believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing.
Okay. Well, here, let me just go through.
They do these things right under the auspice of everybody.
Sure.
Under
your nose.
This whole thing at the Treaty of Versailles, and I'm going to blow your brains away when I show you what the first part of it is.
Well, here, let me just go through.
It doesn't even tell you that this is part of it.
Yeah. Let me just go through the major players here and what was going on, and then we'll go to your info there, okay? So this is from www.johndclare.net. That's JohnDClare.net. And this is about the Peace Treaty of Versailles. Who were the leaders and what did they want? Georges Clemenceau was the Prime Minister of France. He was nicknamed the Tiger. He wanted to make Germany pay for all the damage that France had suffered during the 4 years of fighting. He also wanted to make sure that a war like this would never happen again. And he had three main demands. Germany must return Alsace-Lorraine to France, which had been taken by Germany in 1871. Germany must pay reparations to France to cover the cost of rebuilding the parts of France that had been destroyed during the war. But nevertheless, it was France and Britain that we exposed earlier were the ones who set up the war, were preparing for war against Germany, and instigated the war. So in other words, France wanted Germany to pay for a war that France started. Okay? And then France should be allowed to take possession of the Rhineland, the area near the River Rhine. This was to stop Germany attacking France in the future. David Lloyd George of Great Britain said Germany must be punished, make Germany pay, and squeeze them until the pips squeak were the popular slogans, right? But he didn't want France to take the Rhineland, because he wanted it to be demilitarized instead. Vittorio Orlando was the Prime Minister of Italy. Italy had declared war on Germany in 1915 after the Secret Treaty of London. In the treaty, France and Britain had agreed that Italy would be given the Adriatic coast at the end of the war. When Orlando arrived at Versailles, he expected France and Britain to keep their promise, which is not likely, because France.
You know what's funny is Italy is useless.
Yes.
Italy was useless in World War II for Germany. If they had to fight the whole war themselves, it was Germany against the whole thing, and they would have won if it wasn't for America.
That's right.
Amazing that these losers, even if they win against Germany, they would have beat them too. You know what I mean? They were counting on them in the north of Africa.
Yes.
To help with the supply lines for, what's his name? You know the famous general there.
Yeah, the Desert Fox. I can't think of his name. The Desert Fox.
The Desert Fox. You know his name. They completely failed because they're losers.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, they're our brothers, they're losers.
Yeah. Now, Woodrow Wilson, of course, President of the United States, the USA had only declared war on Germany in April 7, 1917, and had suffered no damage whatsoever. Wilson arrived in Europe with the 14 points, which he hoped would help prevent wars in the future. The most important of these were the peoples of Europe should be allowed to decide their own future. He called this the self-determination, and he wanted to end the empires which European countries had built up. He was not prepared to allow Italy to take the Adriatic coast. Now, all of these 14 points were totally ignored, okay? Wilson was absolutely right that the self-determination should prevail. What the Versailles Treaty actually accomplished was the Balkanization of Europe, in which they created 9 new countries. They created 9 new countries. They just, said, okay, let's put a country here, let's put a country there, all, of course, under Jewish control, and change the map of Europe. Something they had absolutely no right to do. No right whatsoever to do. Okay?
No, but this is, again, division, right? This is what the enemy does. This is what I'm going to keep pointing out. I was talking about Erwin Rommel. I mean, you know, Rommel is the Desert Fox before.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is they have no authority to do such things, and somehow they've done it. I'm going to show you how they yeah. pulled it off. But they have no right to see division again. What they were doing is dividing up Germany. Now, this is what would cause the problems to start
right.
World War II just a short while after. But go ahead. I just wanted to say
now,
that.
This is very important how these divisions occurred. What happened at the peace conference? Most of the discussions were about Germany, but the leaders also tried to redraw the map of Europe. They wanted to break up the Austro-Hungarian Empire and give self-determination to the peoples of Eastern and Central Europe by creating countries that never existed before, or to reestablish countries that existed in the past. For example, Poland. Poland hadn't been a nation since the end phases of the 18th century. And then they just recreated it at Versailles, right? A country that hadn't existed for over 100 years, they recreated it. Anyway.
But what does 1871 have to do with them yeah, getting that back for France?
Exactly.
I mean, that was from 1871 that has nothing to do with now.
Exactly. Well, the point is, what gives these bureaucrats, these international Jewish banksters, the right to drop new national boundaries for a war that they caused? Right? To settle a war that they caused. Okay? Anyway, Germany was forced to reduce its army to 100,000 men and was not allowed to have conscription, reduce the navy to 6 warships and was not allowed to have any submarines, destroy all of its air force, give land, and here's the important things here, give land to Belgium, France, Denmark, and Poland. The land given to Poland became known as the Polish Corridor, and it separated the main part of Germany from East Prussia. And this Polish Corridor was a hotbed of Jewish anti-German hostility until Hitler put an end to it. Okay.
But then a lot of those territories, Eli, joined him in the war, in World
right.
War II.
That's
they
right.
wanted to be part of Germany. They welcomed the Third yeah. Reich in there.
Right. Now, this next item, hand over all of its colonies. See, the reason why Britain and France went to war against Germany and tried to suck Germany in was because Germany was becoming an industrial power and also joining the colonists in Africa and other places. And the French and British said, oh, no, we don't want any competition. It was all about business, all about colonialism and industrialization, which Germany was becoming very powerful at both. And that's the reason why France and Britain conspired to make war against Germany. Next.
May I stop you there for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, there you have the word Hebrew literally means colonizer.
Right.
So we see our nations doing what we do naturally, but we see the Jew who is running, who is in control of the UK and the USA. And, of course, France became quite Jewish as well. It's the number one country in Europe for Jews. They have the most Jews are in that country. What we see is them, they're playing against each other. And so they're playing us off against our own brothers and making enemies between the tribes. See, the tribes don't know that they're brothers. Hitler knew. He
right.
didn't know that we were Israel. But Hitler knew that we were brothers as Aryan brothers, and he knew who was playing us against each other, and he was trying to stop that, you see?
Yeah.
That's
right.
What's interesting about the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so
colonizer, Hebrew. That's what, right. See, we are the Hebrews, not the Jews.
Yeah, right.
Hebrew means colonizer.
Well, the Jews
don't
thieves.
Colonize.
The Jews stole everything that we colonized. That's what they always do, right? And while we were colonizing these places,
they gave back everything we colonized.
Right. They
right?
took it from us.
They
right.
took Africa back now,
right.
South
right.
Africa.
Yeah.
They've taken back many of the places that we colonized. They uncolonized. They're the decolonizers.
Right.
So they're
right.
not Hebrews.
That's right. There you go. Very good. Plus, they instituted banking regimes. What they did in place of the English, French, and German colonies, and even the Spanish colonies, was and Portuguese colonies, was they replaced those colonies with Jew-controlled bankster colonies, right? But they don't describe them as colonies. But what they did, what the Jews did, was they gave loans to all of these black thug tyrants that took over from the colonies, and loaned them a lot of money, And then these countries had to repay it at very high rates of interest, thus bankrupting those countries. All right, so those
Where
countries
we heard
were
that before?
Far
Where
worse we off. Those countries have been far worse off since decolonization than ever in their history. Far
even
worse
the
off.
Blacks say so. Even,
that's right.
Even King Zwelithini from the Zulu tribe is railing on his own people, saying what disgust it is to him that this was much better when it was under white man's control.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, the next couple are really awful. Agree to pay reparations to the Allies for all of the damage caused by the war. These came to £6,600,000,000. Put no soldiers or military equipment within 30 miles of the east bank of the Rhine and accept all of the blame for the war, the so-called war guilt clause. Now,
that's
all of this...
That's crap.
It's bogus.
You know, while they steal the Tsar's money, Eli.
Yeah.
They need reparations when they just stole the richest man in the world's money that was in all the banks around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, that's where they never want. See, that's what it is, control. To tax or to put reparations means to, it's actually to destroy people. That's what it is. It's destruction. And so putting reparations on these people, it is a severe destruction upon the
totally.
People.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into the starvation campaign, which, again, has been buried in history. Nobody ever talks about that. So Italy was given the two small areas of Istria and the South Tyrol. The Adriatic coast was...
For what? They didn't do anything?
Right. On what grounds? On what international legal or humanitarian grounds was all this done? None. It was just...
This is division. This is what I'm telling you. This is how you weaken the nation. Imagine even a weakened Germany came back in World War II and did what it did.
That's right.
Imagine
That's
if
right.
it was never weakened
well,
in the first
Well, with one
place.
Strong leader. One strong leader. Well, because it's all fictitious. All of this remapping of Europe is totally fictitious. It has no legitimacy whatsoever. Okay? So, the Adriatic coast was made part of a new country called Yugoslavia, which included Serbia and Bosnia. Okay, so let's create a couple new countries here. Let's create a new country there. Other new countries were created. Poland, as we just talked about. Poland hadn't existed since the late 18th century. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and Finland were formed from the land lost by Russia. Czechoslovakia and Hungary were formed out of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Okay, so this was all Jew business here. All Jew business, because as we said, all of the countries were represented by the leaders we mentioned, but each one of them had a high-ranking Jewish advisor telling him what to do. Woodrow Wilson had Colonel House. And the Jews, the international Zionists, had their own delegation to the Versailles Treaty. So it was all totally Jew-run. That's why it was so anti-German.
Now, wasn't the Nuremberg... I haven't looked into the Nuremberg trials, but I know the atrocities of it. We should, you know, do that in the future.
Yeah.
I think next week is going to be about Poland. We can share some stories about the true stories of what was happening in Poland that caused Hitler to do what he was doing.
Yeah.
And who the real instigator of the war was, which is Winston Churchill.
Right.
But,
right.
I mean, this week we're doing the Versailles Treaty. But, I mean, we can go on and on. And I really delight in this because this is justice for Germany. It's justice for the tribe of Judah. It's
That's
justice
right.
for the Aryan race.
Yes.
And everything. You know, I just want to mention this real quick. If you ever go look at Rommel, a picture of Rommel, mm-hmm. and then you see this fake actor, James Mason, playing Rommel.
Right.
He doesn't even compare to the real Rommel. The real Rommel looks like the quintessential German Third Reich soldier. I mean, this is a real man. Have you ever seen the picture?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Desert Fox. Yeah, Erwin Rommel.
Well, I mean, this. Let me see if I can get this picture and just send it to you,
right.
You know, while you're talking.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah. So let me continue here because this is an outstanding article here. When the details of the treaty were published in June 1919, most Germans were horrified. Germany had not been allowed to the peace conference. Now, remember, Germany had signed an armistice with the intention of, you know, simply an end to hostilities with the intention of determining peace terms later. Well, Germany never surrendered. Germany never surrendered. They signed an armistice, simply meaning hostilities had ended. Okay? So when the Versailles Treaty started, they treated Germany as if they had been defeated. Well, what happened in the meantime was Rosa Luxemburg and other Jew communists took over control of the government. So now you have German Jews in control of the German government. You have Jews in control of the Versailles Treaty. I smell a rat, David. I smell
a
stinking
Jew
rat.
Well, whenever there's a Jew in the wood pile, as Pastor Bob likes to say. I guess it used to be if there was a nigger in the wood pile, but now it's if there's a Jew in the wood pile, they changed it.
Right.
But it all works the same to me.
Sure. Yeah.
Wherever there's one of them in there, that's why you can't allow them in your country, because it's born in them. They're dead, spiritually dead from the womb. They can't do anything else but what they do. That is what they do. It's not
right.
You
it's
can't
evil.
Change them. It just is what they what they do. It's
everything they do
what
is
they're
evil.
Born to do.
Everything they do is evil because they're the children of the devil. It's just that simple. Okay. Most Germans had believed that the treaty would be lenient because of Woodrow Wilson's 14 points, none of which were enacted. Okay. Yeah, they gave self-determination to countries that never existed before, right? And we're probably just like Ukraine today with Jew banksters calling the shots from behind the scenes. Okay. Many Germans did not believe that the German army had actually been defeated in 1918 because Germany had not been invaded. No, Germany was not defeated. Like many others, they believed that they had been stabbed in the back by the November criminals. Yes.
So what if they didn't pay? What if they didn't pay the reparations? Just said no and not allow it. Then what would have happened?
Well,
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the government was taken over by Jews, and so the Jews started running the Weimar Republic. Okay, so Germany never really recovered from that until Hitler.
Well, that's the thing, Eli. We have to remember from last week that they were working in the government. This is what the Germans figured out after the war. They're saying, how is this possible we lost the war? Well, they were subverting through the government of Germany, through the Judenpresse, which
I call it.
The Judenpresse. They were also doing it, as we saw, trying to spread rumors in the German Navy and the submarine.
We talked about
saying
that last time.
You know, and then the Tsar finally, remember, not the Tsar,
the Kaiser.
What's his name? Wilhelm.
Kaiser.
The Kaiser. That means the same thing as Tsar, believe it or not.
Sure, it does.
Or Caesar or any of the king. He abdicated. So in other words, you know, all these things they were working with that Luxembourg woman. I'm just touching on some things we talked about last week. Remember that they were working. This all was already, they were in Germany. This wasn't like it was in World War II when they were kicked out of Germany. This is a whole different ball game. They were working on the things like not being able to get food in there, the supply line. They were destroying it from within Germany.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Obviously,
so
the international Jews were working.
If you're at war and you've got Jews in your government, they're working against you. It's like I told you with this, with General MacArthur or anybody that fought the Korean War, Vietnamese War, any of those wars, they were reporting everything to the U.N., MacArthur would do next. Not MacArthur, but who I'm talking about.
Yeah, MacArthur.
Anybody.
Yeah,
what
MacArthur.
They were doing next was being reported through the UN to the enemy.
Yeah, it was a UN war, a Jew war, another Jew war, right? Yeah, so
one of those things that are causing us to have peace, you know, the UN bringing peace to the world, you see.
Yeah. So
that's what I'm trying to tell you. You got them in your government. You got them in the in the UN, and they're making wars, and they're not allowing America to win the war because they're showing the enemy everything America plans to do.
Right. Yeah. You're still talking about the Korean War, and actually the same thing is true of the Vietnam War.
Absolutely.
So, but here in a situation, here's the point that let me try to rephrase the point you're making. First of all, we have an international Jew in charge of the Versailles Treaty, and then you have the Jews in Germany who had never lost any social status whatsoever after the war. Okay? You had rich Jews in control of industry and control of the press, and you had communist Jews creating a revolutionary government. I'm not aware that any of the rich Jews complained about the communist Jews taking over the government.
Of course not.
Okay, right?
Of course not. That's the plan of the whole thing.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That was
the
plan.
Even the Rosa Luxemburg thing that was talked about there. All that stuff is you know, it's like you out fighting a war against rats, right?
Right.
And you're trying to beat the rats, but all the rats are living in your home basement.
Right. In your basement.
It's just you can't win that way.
And the rats are in charge of the negotiations. Right.
Yes. They're in charge of the supply lines. They're in charge of if you can get enough things to make weapons of war. They're in charge of the Juden press, the Jewish press.
Right.
They're in charge of your children. They're in charge of education.
Yes.
You know, this is why Hitler figured this all out.
Yeah.
This is why they lost. So he knew that they had to get them out of Germany.
Yeah,
them and the Freemasons. The
Versailles Treaty was a punitive. It wasn't even a treaty because the Germans never signed it. Okay? It was simply imposed upon Germany by the international Jew in cooperation with the German Jews who were still in Germany. Okay? Next point here. Several of the clauses of the treaty were thought to be very harsh. It was going to be almost impossible to pay the reparations. In fact, not almost, indeed, all impossible to pay. In fact, the German government gave up after only 1 year, and the war guilt clause seemed particularly unfair. How could Germany be the only country to blame for the war? After all, it had started when a Serbian shot an Austrian. It was felt that Germany had simply been made a scapegoat by the other countries for all that had happened. That's absolutely right. Germany was scapegoated by the international Jews. All right, so
did you notice that they couldn't pay the reparations?
Right.
Does that not sound like the Central Bank of America, where they give out they do all this money where they do all this money, but they never create any currency to be able to pay the debt off?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that sound like the same thing? In
sure.
other words, they gave him an impossible task to do. So in other words, it was going to back up on him, and when they didn't pay, now you're under bankruptcy again, right?
Right. Yeah, right. Well, it's a constant turmoil, constant struggle, constant stress. And this is what the Jews did to Germany after World War I, even though Germany did not lose the war. Okay.
This is why this century is called the 19th
the Jewish
century.
The
20th century is the century of the Jew.
Yeah, the Jewish century. The Jews themselves proclaimed it as such. But here, a couple more items here from this article. Feelings like these led to a great deal of unrest in Germany in the years from 1919 to 1922. Returning soldiers formed armed gangs, the Freikorps, who roamed the streets attacking people. Now, it's a question of who formed these gangs. Right? Were they formed by the National Socialists or by the Jewish Socialists, okay? In March 1920, I'm sure there was a lot of competition between gangs of all kinds because there was absolute chaos. There was economic chaos. There was an attempted revolution by the communists in January 1919, the Spartacist Revolt, and that was Rosa Luxemburg. There were many murders, including two government ministers, one of whom had signed the armistice. A number of extremist political parties were set up, including the German Workers' Party, which Adolf Hitler took over in 1921. He based his support upon the hatred that many Germans felt for the Treaty of Versailles. Amen. The government became more and more unpopular and appeared to be very weak because it was not able to deal with the revolutions and the unrest. How could it? The Germany was made totally bankrupt by the terms of the Versailles Treaty. What are you supposed
and
to do with
like
empty pockets?
Today.
That's right. America
this
has been
like
turned
the condition.
Into...
There's gangs all over the streets, right?
Right.
Whether they're Muslims or whatever.
Okay.
There's communists. There's Freemasonic gangs out in the street, you know, doing what they always have done through all of history.
Yes.
And now you see this in America as well. Now, this is the pure chaos. This is what Albert Pike was talking about, as you mentioned last week, of releasing the nihilists and
yes.
the atheists.
There you go. Which they have done. Who are the nihilists? They're the libtards of the colleges. That's who they are. Okay? But when you do that, when you create a nihilist movement, the patriots of the country are bound to resist. And that's what happened in Germany. So the Jews are creating all these nihilists here in America. These are Black Lives Matter. These are all the libtards. These are the communists, etc., who are ones demonstrating in the streets. It's always the left that's causing violence, folks. It's never the right wing. Yet all the newspapers ever talk about, oh, those neo-Nazis, they're so violent, they're so dangerous. Yeah? When was the last time an American was attacked by a neo-Nazi? Tell me that.
Did you? Well, he was, you know, a neo-Nazi? Well, that was Rockwell there.
Yeah, right.
But no, I'm only kidding.
Yeah, no.
But, did you notice, in case you didn't notice this, I noticed it when Trump's inauguration was one of the shortest inaugurations of all the speeches. I'm just mentioning this for a second.
Okay.
You noticed that at the end, he went over to the left. You see, as he's facing you, the left is the right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so who's sitting on the left? Bill Clinton, Obama,
right?
Schumer. I don't know how Schumer gets up that high, but that's how high he is, that he gets a front row seat in the left.
Right.
So if you see that speech again, pay attention. It's right at the very end. And you'll see the sheep and the goats.
Yes.
The sheep are on Donald's left. Well, it's Donald's right. But you see, it's our left because we're looking at Donald.
Yes.
On his left, which is our right, is where all that scum is seated.
Right. So
isn't it funny? They know who they are. They're on the left.
Right. But here again, we see the Jews in their Jewish dialectic. Let's just call it the Jewish dialectic. Because Hegel didn't intend for it to be a division principle. He just observed that historically that's how new movements emerge, by a dialectical process between a theme, counter-theme, and result. Okay, but the Jews planned this. The Jews planned every stage of this Versailles Treaty, and they created all these different Balkanized nations so that they could have a future war.
That's exactly what caused it, is what was going on in Poland that we'll talk about next week.
Yes.
I mean, it was the setup, the divide to weaken Germany and to anger the people and to put them under. Remember, they were eating out of garbage cans now.
Right.
The Jews were stealing all their businesses. If you were a business owner and you owned a restaurant in Germany, you could be walking by starving, walking by the windows, and the Jews would be in there mocking you from your own restaurant.
That's right.
That you used to own.
That you used to own, right? Well, that's okay. The next website, Hidden Historical Fact, I sent you the link. The Allied attempt to starve Germany in 1919. People have no idea what the German people were going through as a result of the Versailles Treaty. And this is from the Barnes Review, April 1996. Even after an armistice ended World War I, the rapacious victors continued, the rapacious vipers, continued a devastating blockade of Germany. If one word could describe Germany during the immediate aftermath of World War I, it would be starvation. And yet, while some 900,000 German men, women, and children were starving to death, the American and British public knew nothing about the reason for this Holocaust, deliberately caused by the continuation of a wartime British naval blockade. Just like after World War II, when General Eisenhower, deliberately starved to death 1.5 million Germans after the war. Another fact down the memory hole. Britain's post-war naval blockade of food to Germany in 1919 matched the then-current blockade of news by the American and British press. Even today, only a few non-Germans know the truth, and American and British historians, for the most part, have participated in the cover-up of this most appalling crime. I'm sure most of our listeners, this is the first time they've ever heard of this, that there was a deliberate starvation of the German people right after the Versailles Treaty.
Well, may I mention this, too?
Yeah, go ahead.
May I mention that in the Weimar Republic, it would come to the point where you'd need 1 million marks. The price of bread and milk were changing so fast, the price of the currency, the mark, that you didn't know if you'd be able to get it, but you'd have to take a cart, you know, one of those little children's carts.
Right.
You'd have to take a little cart full of money to the supermarket to get a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. And while you were walking there, the price of it was changing. Either
right, it was going up.
Probably getting worse.
Right, you had to get there fast.
Inflation, right. Deflation, you know.
Yes, yeah. And so this is this is what the German people were going through. And yet the Jews were constantly saying that the Germans are evil. The Germans are evil. The Germans are evil. When you can see the German people are being just brutally crushed and oppressed by the international Jew and local Jews in Germany. And these German people had done absolutely nothing to the Jews. David, they
no,
had done absolutely nothing to the Jews.
They're one of the only countries ever besides America to, except when, you know, Napoleon let them into France out of the ghettos. But, you know, Jews were treated equal in Germany. They were treated very, very well.
Yes.
But this is what happens when you treat a Jew well, just turn your back.
Yeah.
You treat a Negro well.
Don't you dare.
You know what I'm trying to say to you?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Eli, is when we talk about starvation, now let's connect a couple of dots that I talk about from time to time. Let's not forget that in the Tsar's Russia, the world was sending food over there by train, and the Jews were putting it into warehouses and not giving it to the people.
Right.
They were giving the people one potato per family per week. Okay? And they would take the carts down the street and pick up the dead. They'd knock on your door and ask if you had any dead.
Yeah.
Daily. Now, let's also connect in one more dot in this that's in the same area. This is something that shocks people in America. I know it does. You would have never guessed this. But in 1929, when they orchestrated the stock market crash, America was in the Great Depression. People did not have... I mean, this affected everybody, okay,
sure.
Except for the rich. And I'm going to tell you something right now. The same thing. Food was sent from other parts of the world to America. That food was put in storage houses and not given to the people. They were allowed to die.
Right.
So the same thing was going on in Germany. The same thing was going on in America and the same later. And the same thing went on in the Tsarist Russia at about, you know, just previous to when it happened to Germany or just around the same time.
Right.
So this is nothing. This is nothing new. It's something that you have to realize that the world was trying to help and it wasn't allowed to.
Right. Right. Well, that's because the Jews, as the international busybodies and middlemen, always are in charge of the distribution of the goods that are collected, you know, whether they're free or whether they're purchased, right? The Jews are always make sure that they're in charge of the distribution. So you know as well as I do that most of that material and most of that food was sold on a black market for a profit by the Jew.
I would not doubt it. They'd rather let it rot, too,
right?
Than give it to our people.
Yeah,
I'm serious.
Right. Yeah.
I'm dead
serious. No, I agree. You are serious. Yes.
You know, not only that, but let's remember that they had the trade routes, too. The train, remember what they stole from the sick man, Turkey? All those train routes? They
right,
had all
which
that
was built
taken,
by the Germans. You know, the Germans built those trade routes.
Yeah, I mean, this is incredible. Imagine that they tried to pay for the little land of Palestine and couldn't get it that way. And they had to go such a long route to really get it to happen.
Yeah. Right. You really have to look at the sick man. The sick man at this point had become Germany, the starving half-dead man. Because what's happened, it's like somebody invading your house, taking everything you have, cleaning out your wallet, cleaning out your bank accounts, taking all the food off your pantry shelves, etc., and leaving you nothing except maybe a TV set, right? And then he says, now you got to pay me. Oh, by the way, he took your job, too. And then he says, now you got to pay me $1,000 a month. How are you going
to
do it?
As a matter of fact, to work in Germany, you had to be a trader.
Right.
Okay, you had to go against your own people. And they made it that way.
Yes,
and
Jews made it that
way.
And so,
you know, you're eating out of garbage cans. You're literally going through the streets in the garbage cans to find some nutrition to live on. So this is the contrast between Germany filled with Jews in World War One and Germany's without Jews and rats in World War Two. See, the people were on a high, like, because they had come so low. Remember I talked about the sine wave where you hit the bottom and there's a wave that goes straight across and the wave goes up and then crosses the line and goes down and hits the bottom, goes up and hits the top, crosses the line and goes. That's a sine wave. Well, Germany was on the bottom of the sine wave.
Right.
And
that's
when Hitler came into power, everybody got their businesses back. They got their homes back. They got their money back. They got their pride back. They got their, I don't know if I want to say humanity, but let's say they got their manship back.
Right.
You know, because Germany is a very manly country.
Citizenship. They got their citizenship back.
They're not like faggots over in the UK. You know,
exactly.
Remember Archie Bunker called, I don't mean our brothers, but you know, Archie called that a fag country. Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Germany is a manly country. And I mean super manly.
Yeah.
And
of course.
What are you going to do? So basically there's a contrast between, you can see that this is, you know, I as I've done these Hitler things, Hitler a perspective, and I put our show up on there this last week and I'll put this one too.
Yeah.
But you know, and the Great Divide, I've got people accusing me of glorifying the Nazis. You see, you can even spell it out to these people and they're so blind.
Well, if they probably haven't listened to the show.
If you say, go look at the movie that I showed you, you know, Triumph of the Will, and they can't understand what I'm showing them.
Yeah. Well, they have no idea of the atrocities committed against the German people right after Versailles. They simply don't know anything about it. In fact, the next sentence here, the guilt of the world press is covering up the atrocity is compounded by the fact that the American and British public were told of the starvation itself, but were kept ignorant of the criminal policies of the Allies which produced it. Newspapers carried stories of relief efforts to rescue the starving. The most famed of these efforts was directed by Herbert Hoover, later to become the 31st president. As told by Otto Friedrich in Before the Deluge, a portrait of Berlin in the 1920s, John Maynard Keynes cited the testimony of an observer who accompanied Herbert Hoover's mission to help the starving, and I quote, "You think this is a kindergarten for the little ones. No, these are children of 7 and 8 years, tiny faces with large, dull eyes, overshadowed by huge, puffed, rickety foreheads, their small arms just skin and bones. Remember the Jews accusing the Germans of starving them, which is a lie? And above
it's
the crook-
unbelievable. Yeah. It is unbelievable. Yeah. I remember that Herbert Hoover stopped what was going on. That to his credit. That's why you don't hear of him as a famous president.
That's right.
Did you notice that there's one other president that you really never hear of? Calvin Coolidge.
Right.
I'm going to tell you why you never hear of Calvin Coolidge.
He was a good president.
He only served one term.
Yes.
He turned the American economy around within 4 years, and he started it going the right way.
Yeah, like Hitler.
You never hear his name, Calvin Coolidge.
No,
look up his legacy. You see, you don't hear about Herbert Hoover because of what he did for the Germans.
That's right.
You don't hear about Calvin Coolidge because he was able to turn the economy around and he was straightening out America.
Right.
So they dumped him in the toilet as quick as possible. I'm going to have to look into that. But that's why you never hear of Calvin. You hear of Herbert, I mean, you hear of Herbert Walker Bush,
right.
And you hear of Clinton, and you hear Obama, and you hear FDR, and Woodrow Wilson, and all the rest of them, but you never hear about them.
Yes. Well, again, here, let me do this description, because you always hear about black children in Africa described in these terms. Their small arms, just skin and bones, and above the crooked legs with their dislocated joints, the swollen, pointed stomachs of the hunger edemia. You see this child here, the physician in charge explained. It consumed an incredible amount of bread, and yet it did not get any stronger. I found out it hid all the bread it received underneath the straw mattress. The fear of hunger was so deeply rooted in the child that it collected the stores instead of eating the food, a misguided animal instinct made by the dread of hunger worse than the actual pangs. So this is what was happening to the German children, folks, right after the armistice. For 3 whole years, this was going on. And nary an American was aware of it. Of course, this was the period during the Roaring Twenties of America, right? When the Americans were celebrating the victory in Europe, and then all of the drugs and prostitution and gambling started in America. Well, it started in Germany too, folks, by Jews.
And don't forget, when we went in with the probation thing, they were bringing first they brought in the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Italians. That was the first wave of Italians. But the second wave were these Sicilian ones with they call them grease balls or WAPs.
Right.
Without papers. That's all it means.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And basically they had the women in America brainwashed to look for a tall, dark, and handsome man. Right, hey, right. Tall, dark, and handsome.
Well, actually, they weren't
and
tall.
And so they were looking for, they weren't that tall, the Italians.
No, they weren't.
What I'm saying is a lot of Irish women married those Italians,
yes.
The second wave, not the first wave.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
Which is race mixing.
Yes. Meanwhile, the armistice terms dictated by the Allies at Versailles would assure that Germany could not recover economically, even to the point of providing a subsistence livelihood for the majority of its citizens. The German people themselves were being punished for the war, a war which they had nothing to do with, nothing whatsoever. France was to get Alsace-Lorraine. We talked about that already. And then the Polish corridor was taken away from Germany and given to Poland. Denmark and Belgium would slice off several border regions, and the League of Nations would take charge. Remember, that was the League to Enforce Peace. That was the original name of the League of Nations. Would take charge of Germany's African colonies.
There you go with
the
Rommel.
Jews.
But let me also make mention of this in case you didn't know this was going on. When Judea, which they have nothing to do with Judea, declared war on Germany, and you saw that paper?
That's the Jews, yeah. Right, the international Jews.
Yes, they're not Judea. They have nothing to do with Judea, but they called themselves Judea then.
Yes.
Okay, remember?
33.
Okay.
1933.
And they declared. Well, what that meant was, in America, if you were to buy any German goods whatsoever, these Jews would send these Freemasons and Jews and communists to go out in front of your business and go against your business.
Yes. Yes,
and boycott
absolutely.
Your business. You see, they are the ones that boycott everybody else, but God forbid you were to boycott them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, they'll call you a Nazi.
What did that guy do? What did the foreign minister of Israel just say last year when Brussels was bombed? He admitted that it was done because of the boycott.
Yes.
Against Israel.
Exactly.
So when you boycott against Israel, there'll be bombings in your nation.
Yeah.
But when they so in other words, you can't boycott them.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I believe Spain just put a law in saying that you have to buy goods from the Jews.
Really?
Like, right. As if they're going to tell you who you
well,
have that,
they don't
want
to get bombed.
Well, yeah, well, also, this is what happened. You'd have all this Germans. Remember that Germany had to import a good amount of their food, too. They couldn't. They can't.
Right.
They don't have a big enough land in order to supply all their food.
Right.
So that's something that's against them in the beginning.
Yes. Well, they used to have Alsace-Lorraine, which was a breadbasket of Western Europe. But France got that now. So they took that away from Germany. Okay. So,
there
was no more, very little food growing territory, right? Germany is primarily forest land and mountains, low mountains and high mountains. There's some plains, but not too many. Okay, it's mainly rolling hills. There is some agriculture, but not like America, not like Russia, the vast plains of fertile fields. Germany doesn't have that. Okay. Immediately following the war, Germany was racked with insurgencies, coups, and counter-coups. The Bolsheviks attempted to take over similar to the revolution in Russia. The Allies, meeting in Versailles, celebrated the unrest and destruction. Yeah, celebrated is the correct word. Celebrated. all this unrest. And the people, particularly the American people, were kept in the dark about the continuing blockade. Communist agents sent by the Bolshevik regime and the fledgling USSR were fomenting revolutions throughout the prostate country. As General Leon de Grelle points out in his Hitler, Born at Versailles, while the murder of defenseless civilians was carried out in Bavaria, the delegates at the Paris Peace Conference had their first meeting. Far from being horrified at such massacres, the Allies could not contain their glee. The Bavarian bloodbath was a gift from the gods, which meant that Germany would be split and more Germans would be killed. Allied diplomatic envoys were rushed to Munich to kowtow to the bloodthirsty trio, the three agents sent by Lenin, named Levine, and Axelrod. They offered food and money to bolster their opposition to Berlin. This was the attempted coup by the Russian Jews and German Jews and international Jews, which failed. We talked about this last time. And then de Grelle says what few historians will admit, quote, although the war had ended, Germany was still under Allied blockade, which was ruthlessly enforced. The first state of Germany to benefit from a lifting of the blockade would be communist-controlled Bavaria. Okay, this is all controlled by communist Jews, folks. And we talked last week about whether this support for the German communists was a failure of logistics, or whether the Jews, the international Jew, did this deliberately. I think it was just a failure of logistics, because when you create such chaos throughout the land, and you need to bribe people in order to get things done. And sometimes these people just take the money and run, right? And the stuff...
What's new?
Yeah, and the stuff doesn't get delivered, okay? That's probably why the Soviet revolution failed in Germany. Plus, the German soldiers, the German military, had found out about it. And it was the ex-German military that took care of Rosa Luxemburg and her ilk, okay? So they weren't counting on that. One must search diligently for historical references to the continued devastating blockade. And when mention is found, it is usually just that, a mere mention. Dieter Raff confirms the peacetime blockade in his A History of Germany from the Medieval Empire to the Present. Quote, the Allied peace terms turned out to be extremely severe, far exceeding the worst fears of the German government. By this time, the German government was no longer in the hands of Germans. It was in the hands of Jews. The peace treaties of Brest-Litovsk and Bucharest were declared invalid, and the food blockade around Germany was to continue. Thus, Germany's capitulation was accomplished. Germany never capitulated. It was Jews in the name of Germany that capitulated for Germany.
That's the thing. Right. There it is again. Uh-huh. See, I'm saying, there's your proof what we said. We're not just talking off the top of our head. In other words, in Germany, when we even showed this last week, in Germany, they were doing all the say for the country, because they were in charge of the this is how they figured this all out, that they were doing this while the people were at war.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
They were doing all the speaking for the nation, and they're not even German.
Yeah, right, exactly, right? And there's a couple of photos in this article of German women ruffling through a pile of garbage to find food. And another photo that potato peelings became money, became like money, right? Give me some of those potato peelings. This is how seriously the German people were starving. Now, David, let me ask you something. If some foreign power did this to the American people, we lost the war, and then all of a sudden they took everything we had. Let me just quote this. Thomas Lamont recorded, the Germans were made to deliver cattle, horses, sheep, goats, etc. A strong protest came from Germany when dairy cows were taken to France and Belgium, thus depriving German children of milk. The Versailles Jews simply took everything the German people had. If it wasn't locked down, they took it and created this massive starvation in Germany. This is one of the most blacked out phases of history. Yet all we hear about is 6 million Jews dying in gas chambers that never existed.
Yeah, lies, because they control the press. That's the key of the press.
That's right.
We can't allow this to carry on any longer. This is something we've known about for years. We knew that this was a problem. Even, see, America is controlled by the Jews. When I told you on my show last week of Saxon's Creed, I read a little thing from Arnold Liess, and he said that the five-pointed star is the control, it's the Star of Amalek, I said.
Right.
But he said it is the star for the Edomite Jews of the sign that they control.
Yes.
So in other words, you see that they put that star in place of the double-headed eagle in Moscow. They put it on the tanks and everything. In America, we also see, notice how that we were allies with Russia when
right.
they were communists, and we
Jew
are
communists. Yes,
you know, not we were supposedly democratic by that point too, because of FDR's New Deals and everything.
Yeah.
That's when it became, I believe, our beloved yeah. democracy.
That's
notice
right.
how the same signs are on our flag. The stars that show that Edomite control, that Jewish control. That's the sign that they're controlling something. They're showing they control all the states.
Yes.
They're showing that they control the war tanks of our the machines. Our generals have that on there. You know what I mean? Those stars are
right.
everywhere,
right.
all over American iconery, all over Russian iconery, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll notice it, right?
Yeah.
So that's
right.
the sign of Jewish control. It's the Star of Amalek.
That's
it's
right.
the one
right.
Yahweh says that I will go to war from generation to generation with Amalek.
Right.
He hates Amalek.
Yeah. And the
so
gold
in other
fringe.
Words, they're showing that they control our, when they say they were the allies, they really are the axis of evil.
Yes.
They're calling the people that were decent, the Japanese people, the Germans, and well, I don't know about Italy, but they're calling them the axis of evil.
Right. Right.
It's yeah. always the, you see what I mean? When in reality, the axis of evil is completely
jury.
The allies.
It's jury. Yeah. Yeah. Because you
yes.
can't blame America. You can't blame Britain. You can't blame France. It's the Jews in control of these countries that initiated the hostilities and dictated the terms of the peace.
Now, okay. are we saying that we hate America and that we are subversives and want to destroy America? No, just the opposite.
Yeah, right.
We're saying that we're under Jewish control. And the reason we're under Jewish control right now is what the very thing that Hitler wanted to prevent. This is what Hitler and Germany, the German people, dedicated themselves to, the tribe of Judah. They were to free us from communism.
Yes.
Instead, we helped We helped these Jews
yeah.
because we were under their control, including the Jew
America, Jew America,
which has
and Jew Britain,
star,
and
they
Jew
have
France.
The dot and the circle on
right.
their planes, which is the penis
yeah.
of Osiris, the sons of God and the daughters of men, the pool,
right.
the female,
right.
And what you'll notice that all three of those, they used America to
right.
make sure that Germany was under communist rule and divided up at the
right.
end of World
and
War II,
and they used
made
Russia.
Sure of it.
They used Russia, too, while Russia was not yet Bolshevized. As we talked about last time, Jacob Schiff set Russia up for that war against Japan, lending $20 million to the Japanese, and Russia just suffered a huge defeat, a crushing blow to the ego and to the military. And then they sucked the Tsar into the joining the Allies against Germany. The Russian army performed very poorly for obvious reasons because they were sick and tired of fighting wars already. And Russia actually retired from the war. They basically lost that war to Germany, right? But then they were immediately set upon by the Bolsheviks in 1917 at the height of the war, David.
Yes,
so
and
the
and
Jews totally
armies,
betrayed,
sure
set Russia up. Totally set Russia
yes.
up.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sure that their army, I know that we in America have not only supported through Jacob Schiff $20 million towards that way to support the revolution to steal the Tsar's money, but I'm sure they used the Tsar's money to build up the Russians for World War II.
Absolutely.
Build their army,
yeah, the
build
Soviets.
Everything the way
the Soviets,
it could.
Yeah.
If they had had this weather controlling yeah. stuff back then,
right.
they could have really made sure the Germans couldn't have got in there. You
right.
know what I mean?
Sure.
But America is what, see, the Germans were trying to save America, England, and everybody from this communism. And basically all what happened by America helping, by America under Jew control,
right,
going in there and helping the effort to destroy,
yeah,
Germany, all that did was make sure that America stayed under Jewish control, that England stayed under Jewish control, and that Russia would stay under Jewish,
right,
control for a certain amount of time.
Right.
Which,
right,
seems to be coming out. They seem to be coming out of it now.
Yes.
So, but what I'm saying, but it also made sure that Poland would be under, half of Poland would be under communist control after World War II.
Right.
Half of Germany would be under communist control, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And then they worked on China.
Yes,
but anyway,
exactly.
I don't want to get ahead, but I'm just going to say to you,
if
Germany had stopped them in World War II, we wouldn't be in the positions we're in our countries,
right,
today.
Yeah. No, the Jews have won every war since the Napoleonic Wars. And they have, since the Napoleonic Wars, have instigated every war. Okay?
And they've used Yahweh's battle axe to do it.
That's right, to kill each other. So let me,
yes,
just say right here now, and I've said this many times, never again, never again should white people allow the Jews to get us in another war to fight each other, or for that matter, to fight anybody else. We must absolutely reject Jewish warmongering for good, forever, never again. Okay? And
absolutely,
if they try to do it again, I personally will start sizing up certain Jews.
by the way, Eli,
yeah,
in case you don't know this, you know, this Harry Truman Juman,
yeah,
Freemason,
right,
which is a Jew.
Yes.
And they put a little thing back there, you know, a little fake thing to try to make him look like he wasn't a Jew and that,
right,
he was talking bad about the Jews, remember?
Right, right.
He did do one good thing is when they wanted to pay him to recognize the state of Israel, he said he was going to do it,
yeah,
but he crossed it out at the last minute.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know why he went against his own thing, but here's what he said in a newspaper article. He said, "I don't care if the Germans win or if the Russians win, just as many of them die as possible."
Right.
Is that, yeah, not a Jew?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Shows you their hate, their bloodlust towards our. And we're always the ones being accused of hate when we're the ones trying to keep peace and make peace and stop these senseless, absolutely brainless wars on our part, which are simply Jewish wars of extermination against the white race. That's all they are, folks. Two more paragraphs here. Actually, let me, because you were talking about Hoover, and this is how Lloyd George of Britain, his attitude toward Hoover was trying to help these starving German people. He was trying to do good.
And he did do it, yes.
And he did do it. Now here's,
I don't know how he did it, but he did it.
Yeah, well, he was a focused white man is what he was. Quote, "Frustrated by apathy and obstruction, Hoover was brought on the carpet by British Prime Minister Lloyd George, who was inclined to brush him off as that Salvation Army man. The Prime Minister, distressed by reports of famine in Germany, wanted to know why Hoover had not done his job. At this, the American let him have the bitter truth. Lloyd George, feeling that the tact was not one of Hoover's great qualities, asked him to give the consul an unexpurgated version of his remarks. This was done, and a stormy and wordy session ensued." In other words, Hoover let him have it. He said, "It's your fault, all of you Allied powers. It's your fault that the German people are starving. When are you going to stop doing that to the German people?" Okay? "The food blockade was not terminated until July 12, 1919. On May 7th of that year, Count von Brockdorff-Rantzau had indignantly referred to this fact in addressing the Versailles Assembly, quote, 'The hundreds of thousands of non-combatants,' the German chief delegate stated, 'who have perished since November 11, 1918, as a result of the blockade, were killed with cold deliberation after our enemies had been assured of their complete victory,'" unquote.
Very interesting. I've got,
yes,
a little quote here for you might not have,
yeah,
heard of before that,
okay,
I never did.
All right.
From a scumbag Jew president who replaced Kennedy that,
right,
you were speaking about this morning.
Yeah.
Lyndon B. Johnson. Here's a quote from him, black people. Now, this, you know, listen to what he has to say. I'll have those niggers voting Democratic for the next 200 years, touting right. his underlying intentions for the Great Society programs.
Right.
LBJ confided with two like-minded governors on the Air Force One. So this is something secret, he said. Again,
yeah.
I'll have those niggers voting Democratic for the next 200 years,
yes.
this scumbag.
Yeah, well, Johnson couldn't even bring himself to pronounce Negro. He would say Nigra. Right? Nigra.
Right? Yet he was their greatest proponent, one of their greatest as
yeah,
a president
right. they think
at that time.
That's what
right?
they think, right? That's what blacks think. They were being set up for poverty. Look at all
Absolutely.
The poverty and chaos yeah. in the black community today. Direct result of LBJ's policies.
Well, let's think about that for a moment, okay? Here's how you're playing both sides of the coin, right?
Right.
Number one, the Democratic Party is the party of the people, the savior,
right.
the
yeah,
one
right.
who's for the working man, right?
Oh, yeah,
now,
right.
Now, this guy, you know, makes sure, he knows they're never going to progress because they're a regressive race, that left to themselves, even with their welfare money, they're never going to get any further than they would before. You see, they never learned, that's what you realize, is they never learned when they were in Africa, when we should have never intervened in the continent, right? But
That's
since
right.
we intervened, they were having too many children and they couldn't feed them. And they didn't even come to the common sense point to themselves, geez, because they're such a feeling people, so
yeah,
sex
right,
would be
right.
like more important than anything,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sex
and
with
so
monkeys
basically
and
they just keep having
too,
poor
yeah.
children they can't feed, right?
Right.
Well, they come
right.
over here into America and they get free money. And then they sing their songs, as I've mentioned before, about how they can't feed their children in the ghettos, and they're having more and more and more children they can't feed.
Yeah.
They don't learn anything from one continent to the other with a welfare program even. They don't learn anything at all. So in other words, when we send money into that continent, we're not helping that continent. We're helping bringing forth our own destruction. But see, what we're seeing here is he's playing this. He's going to use this against them. He knows what they are. And so he's going to make them vote the Democratic Party for the next 200 years because he's going to use them as just what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see what I mean by that? That he's playing both sides of the coin.
Sure.
In other words, the Democratic Party's the party of the yeah. people, so he gets them to vote for Democrat,
right,
which
exactly.
is mostly – this is a game.
Well, every single Democratic administration has always promised to tax the rich and give that money to the poor, but that the rich never get taxed. I mean, how many times do you have to fail to keep your promise before the Democratic Party wakes up to the lies, right? It's nothing but lies. Period.
Amazing
nothing but
how
lies.
They're able to play both parts of that.
That's right. That's
both,
right.
You know, parts of the game.
Yeah.
It's and they use and the game works perfectly because the blacks are a regressive race. You know, they blame Whitey for their non-success, but it really is, it's just their yeah. nature to regress.
Right. Well, they can't, they don't have
it's
talents.
Just like the Jew.
They don't
it's
have our abilities.
Like the Jew. They just don't, yeah.
Yeah. That's all there is
they
to that.
They just have it in them to make it.
That's, you know, just every time, we talked about it last time. How many times have we given Haiti a brand new government and they corrupt it every single time? Look at Detroit. Look at every other black-run city. It's always totally corrupt. Totally corrupt. All right, every black-run nation is totally corrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I hate every politician. Marion Barry was a cokehead.
Yeah,
they
right?
make a statue
yeah.
out of him. You know what
right?
I mean?
Yeah, and they reelected him, knowing he was a coke addict. Right? right? This is, hey,
yeah, so,
well, you got black community has to get coke,
again.
Right?
yeah,
we're not talking
yeah.
about Coca-Cola, folks. right?
This is,
it's incredible. And the libtards don't see it.
Correct.
It's
yeah, another thing
right.
he did.
The libtards
but,
don't
you know,
see all this corruption.
Obama's legacy.
Yeah.
Obama gave these black people more than anybody ever gave them. He doubled our national debt, which is fake anyway. It's not even a real. It's
right.
not real. But what good did it do for the black people?
Nothing.
What good did he do for the black people?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
As a matter of fact, he destroyed them.
That's right.
Because now
That's
they're
right.
worse off than they've ever been. They're turning the whole world against them.
Right. Well, and their communities, their so-called ghettos, are less peaceful than ever, thanks to Obama.
So what good did he do for them?
Yes. Nothing. No, he made, as you said, he made things worse. He absolutely made it. The only the good thing is in black people's minds, because he's black and he says, oh, I'm for the black community. No, he's not. Come on, you stupid black people. Wake up. They're lying to you. They're using you.
Obama gonna pay my mortgage.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you lose your house anyway.
Right? Yeah, well, that did fail. All of that
That's
failed.
Right.
You see, even when you give these blacks, you could practically give them the house three quarters of the way there.
Yeah.
Say, okay, we'll pay it all the way till 75% of it's paid. They'd still lose the house.
Right. Yeah, they won't keep up the payments. They'll be snorting coke, forget to make the payment, and the bank takes it over.
But right? That's because Whitey threw the coke the in Jew our neighborhoods.
Bank, right? But the Jew makes off big time because the loan is guaranteed by the government, right?
Right.
And then the Jew collects the interest, and then when the black person defaults, he gets the house.
It's amazing.
What a racket that is.
The whole thing is just, it's crazy. But I suppose back to our Treaty of Versailles, that's how crazy the whole thing is the whole world is a setup on you.
Right.
It's like you come out of the womb and you're already behind the eight ball.
Right.
A doctor's got you upside down, holding you upside down, slapping you in the butt.
Instead of being born with a silver spoon in your mouth, you're born with debt notes in your mouth.
Yeah,
right?
and the military is paid with... See, this controlled military is being paid with debt notes.
That's right.
So they're not even getting paid real money to kill.
Right.
They're not even... They're professional killers being paid debt notes to kill.
Well, we haven't had the hyperinflation yet. That's coming. Or it may collapse before hyperinflation, but the collapse is coming. Because we already... The Federal Reserve note is already hyperinflated. It's just being spent overseas. It's being spent to pay off these warmonger corporations, these so-called contractors, right, who are making big profits off of wars in other countries, right? So that country is being shuffled back and forth between corporations and banks, and we don't even see any of it, right? The average American doesn't get paid in that system, right? We have to struggle to make money in the free market, what's left of it here in America, or unless you're with the government, if you're on Social Security, you're getting some money from the government. But nothing compared to these big corporations who are getting billions.
You know what my opinion is? Would you like to hear my opinion, what could be taking place right now?
Sure.
It's come to the point where everybody is starting to realize what the fake, what democracy is.
Right. It's fake.
Is the vilest form of government. Of course, there's people out there still tout it. But what I'm trying to say is this. This could be a game of the Jew. And I'm going to just quickly tell you what's going on. You see, they've realized that we've risen. Remember what she said at Haverbeck. She said, Jew named it with two centuries, the same century with two names. The first name is the Jewish century. And, of course, they use the bogus term the century of anti-Semitism.
Right.
So what's happening right now, the Jews are backing off so badly that what's-his-face just came out himself, Netanyahu, and he just declared that Hitler wasn't trying to kill all the Jews. He was just trying to expel them from America.
Right.
And I explained this on my news show that what's really happening with that is that they're backpedaling so bad. Hitler is becoming so popular in the world, his book Mein Kampf.
Right.
And there's the Asians, and it doesn't matter what country you go in, down South America, they're starting to do these Hitler parades with all the regalia and everything. That now the Jews are realizing the power of seeing something like Triumph of the Will, seeing that kind of unity in a nation, it just brings nothing but pride. And
yes.
So now they're afraid that people will see, now that the Jews have told everybody they wanted to kill all the Jews. Now they think that if you start loving Hitler, you're going to attain that same thing and say, let's go all kill the Jews, because Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Now he's backpedaled it and said what the truth really is that Hitler didn't want to kill the Jews. He wanted to expel them from his nation. So
right.
Now,
which is all he ever wanted to do. That's all he ever wanted to do.
See what my point is? You know why he's doing that? So that now when people start to come to Hitler and say, wow, Hitler's great. Now he wants them to know they didn't want to kill all the Jews, though.
Right.
They just wanted to expel them. You understand the psyop?
Yeah, he blamed it on some Arab.
Right. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, but what I'm really saying is they don't want them to come to the conclusion that if you love Hitler, the conclusion Hitler wanted to do is he wanted to kill the Jews. Now, they've told us that for, what, 70-something years?
Right. Now they say it isn't true.
Change it to the truth.
No, it's not true anymore, folks. Okay, we lied to you. He's basically admitting that they lied to us for 70 years.
Yeah, but see, that's the psyop of the whole thing.
Sure.
Is that, you know.
But no, he got the idea from somebody else.
Hitler, he didn't want to kill us, folks. Right. He didn't want to kill us. He didn't want to exterminate all of us. All he wanted to do is kick us out of their nation. So do that to us. Don't kill us all.
Yes.
See, that's what,
yes.
You know. But anyway, here's the thing of what I was saying. When you come to the fact that Donald Trump is going to, redo the nation and fix things, right?
Yes.
Now that gives you a false sense that democracy works.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to think about that,
right,
ladies and gentlemen. Democracy, whether Donald Trump is going to do great things for the nation, and I hope he does and everything like that, don't get any ideas in your head that that's because democracy works. Democracy, whether he does this or not, democracy is the vilest form of government, period. That's it leads to tyranny.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, because
see,
it's mobocracy.
Be what they're doing. In other words, now that everybody's anti-Jewish, now we'll get the economy going. We'll give them some jobs. We'll make them happy again for a little while, and then we'll strike them again when they least expect it after they've let their guard down.
Yes. Yes.
You can never let your guard down again, ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be quoting now from www.mtholyoke.edu, which is a pretty good article, Political Disorder, The Weimar Republic and Revolt of 1918-23. With the abdication of Kaiser Wilhelm, a new government was formed in the town of Weimar, as Berlin was too unstable, known as the Weimar Republic. Thus, a new democracy was born. There's that word.
Yeah,
vilest form of
word.
Government. From the start of the Weimar Republic seemed doomed, being branded the November criminals for signing the armistice that betrayed Germany and then for signing the Treaty of Versailles. Okay, I think people, now given the prelude that we've been talking about here, people understand now why the Germans call these people November criminals. They did not represent Germany. They represented Jews, and they were placed in positions of power in Germany by the international Jews. Okay?
Do you know when this happened? You know what the date they used on this was?
What?
November 11th, 1919.
Right.
Get a load of that date. 11-11-1919.
Right.
Like a mirror image, like a kind of a strange thing, like 11. You know that's Edom's number, right?
Sure.
The Edomite's number?
Right, exactly, right?
Yes.
So
November
moreover,
22nd being like 33, right?
Yeah, multiple.
When they killed Kennedy, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, they love playing with numbers. Moreover, the Social Democrats that held the majority in the Weimar Republic were pressured both by left and right seeking to usurp power. Okay, so, well, yeah, because they didn't want Jews in power. Most of the Germans didn't know it was Jews doing this anyway, all right? But nevertheless, they realized that whoever is in power is not doing us any good. One of the first problems that the Weimar Republic faced was hyperinflation. Money became so worthless that children could play with stacks of it. And here's a picture of children stacking wads of money like a pyramid, right? People's savings were wiped out, causing widespread discontent and civil unrest. So in addition to the starvation, the deliberately caused starvation of the blockade, the Jews hyperinflated German money to the point of it being absolutely worthless. I mean,
and this is why it was, remember, they called it a democracy. I want you
right.
to pay attention, ladies
That's
and gentlemen.
Right.
See, this is why democracy is the Jews' favorite form of government. This is why they wanted to take down all the monarchies, because they can do this to your nation very quickly with their money scheme. Look what he's telling you right now. Look what they did to the Weimar Republic in just a short time with their democracy.
Right, right. Yeah, conditions that prevented the success of the Weimar Republic. The army leaders who were from Junker or noble families were unwilling to be led by people below their social class. They didn't want democracy. The army did not support the Weimar Republic either. The Weimar Republic did not have any charismatic leaders. Friedrich Ebert, the first president of the Weimar government, was not a people's leader. He was probably a Jew. Instead, he was despised by patriotic Germans who saw him as a November criminal. The bureaucratic transition was not smooth. The government was still stuck in the old monarchy system of the Kaiser, and plus you have pure bureaucrats trying to run a government now. They're unelected. These people were unelected, folks, even though democracy says you have to have an election, right?
And they are unelected here, too. I don't want I didn't want Obama. I didn't want any of these people.
Yes, yes. So, anyway, they give all kinds of excuses here. The pride of the German people has nothing to do with it. The German people were being oppressed. They were being starved to death. Their money was being made worthless, so they couldn't buy or sell.
That's what you get with democracy.
That's right.
That's what you get with democracy.
Yeah, yeah. Political problems. People showed their unhappiness with multiple putsches or revolts that added to the instability of Germany. This article obviously doesn't talk about Jews. The government had no choice but to crush them using unemployed soldiers returning from the war. Spartacist Revolt, January 1919. The left-wing Spartacists led by Rosa Luxemburg and William Liebknecht, they were financed, which means loving knight or lovely knight, they were financed by Bolsheviks in Russia. No mention of Jews. The putsch was brutally crushed by unemployed soldiers, and Luxembourg and Liebknecht were hung. Hooray!
Yes.
That's what we got to do with all of these Jew traitors that are running our country, folks. They got to be hung. The cop
you heard
putsch.
What I said, right, Eli?
Yes.
You heard that I said that the whole Senate unanimously,
yes,
unanimously voted for that to curtail
Anti-Semitic speech.
Yeah,
so-called
right?
anti-Semitic
that's
speech.
Not one person in the Senate stood up and
yeah,
said, no,
not one.
I'm for the Constitution. I'm for free speech. Not one. What does that tell you right there?
Yeah.
The whole Senate is completely compromised and yeah, should be put to trial and hung.
Yes, and I think the Senate is about one-third Jewish now, too. They've been gradually taking over the entire Senate.
That,
yeah, okay. The Kapp Putsch, March 1920. This right-wing revolt was led by General Kapp in an attempt to initiate a military coup. He had many soldiers as his followers, so this revolt was that much more difficult to put down. The government had to halt the revolt with the help of loyal soldiers and street gangs. Yeah, communist street gangs. General Kapp only received a six-month prison sentence as many were sympathetic to the right-wing sentiments and they felt it was important to respect social hierarchy. Ruhr Valley Incident, January 1923. Germany was finding it extremely difficult to pay reparations. Germany was late on several reparations payments as well. Well, they couldn't make any money. No German could have had a job. How are they supposed to, and how's the German government supposed to tax people that don't have jobs, that don't make any money, that don't get a paycheck, right? As a result, France invaded the Ruhr Valley, Germany's industrial heart, to get the coal that was due as reparations.
How about this, though? How about this fact? And this is a fact, Eli. Okay, you take the American people right here, right? The way it was. We all should be millionaires.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't need jobs. We don't need jobs. We need to be paid part of the gross domestic product. You know,
right?
There are people
yeah,
that'll work anyway. Right. But what I'm saying is that we as we sell things to other nations, we get all this kind of money. We have the most oil out of any country in the world. We have all kinds of this is the land of milk and honey. We have
yeah,
all kinds of things. Never mind the creations. Now, when you talk about working, maybe making a computer and creating technology is a lot of fun for men.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. It's not really a job. It's fun. It's
right,
what they do for work.
For white
now,
men.
If we were all paid our portion of the gross domestic product,
yeah,
we'd all be millionaires. And then we could, if we wanted to invent things, we could invent things. If we
yes,
wanted to, you know, make music or art or whatever it might be, or teach the gospel or whatever it might be, we'd be free to do all these things.
Yeah.
No, the jobs, they keep telling us we need these jobs.
Well, guess which
country. But they're
country...
ripping us off.
Guess which country in the northern coast of Africa, whose president was ruthlessly murdered, had just that, where the people of that country were actually being paid by the government to start a family and start a farm, etc.
Gaddafi,
right. And he was murdered because he was doing that. Because the Jews weren't getting a cut.
He was doing a lot of things over there.
Yes, he was. He was an outstanding leader. Outstanding. Yeah. But because the Jews hated him, he had to go. Okay? All right. Now, as the French occupied the Ruhr Valley, humiliating the Germans, the workers in the Ruhr Valley went on strike with the support of the government. To show their support, the government printed more money to pay wages to the workers. This only further exacerbated the hyperinflation. The French finally pulled out in 1925. And finally, the Munich Beer Hall Putsch, November 1923. Hitler and the Nazis attempted to take control of Munich by force. The revolt failed as the army unexpectedly clashed with the SA, which is the Nazi stormtroopers, even though the generals were placed under house arrest in the beer hall. So here we see this is the beginning of Hitler's rise to power because the German people were so brutally oppressed by the Allies and the Versailles Treaty enforced by Jews. Okay? Now, let me ask you a question, David. Was Hitler justified, and were the German people justified in their hatred of the Jews by the time Hitler came to power?
Absolutely, because they had figured out this is what happened. This is what they talk about, the beer putsches.
Right.
See, the Germans came back from World War I, and they said, I don't understand what happened. How did we possibly lose this? Yeah. We got the greatest 2.2 million army, and this is the tribe of Judah. I mean, this is incredible. They're saying, what went on? And when they started to figure it out at the beer putsches, you see, they right. talked amongst themselves. They're not like Americans are today. We're islands to ourselves. See, we're so divided in our country right now that we are islands to ourselves. Yes. You don't even want to say hi to your brother when you walk down the street. People don't want to, you right. see? Yeah. It's that point. So in other words, we don't talk to each other anymore. Yeah. We don't talk yeah. to our children. We don't talk to our family. We don't talk to our wives. We don't talk to anybody anymore. We're islands to ourselves. Yeah, we're divided.
That's the Jewish way.
So these people still talk to each other, and that's how they figured it out and got together, and right. they figured out, oh, it's the Freemasons that were doing this. Oh, it's the Jews who are right. They started realizing they put on their Judar.
Right.
All right, exactly. And they started saying, what's this guy's last name? Yeah, what's this right. Oh, this is what's going on. And they figured it out.
Yeah,
and
that's what really And you know what, David? The establishment historians still say that the stab in the back was a myth. Right? They still make this ridiculous
claim. The
Jews
do nothing but stab in the back. Yeah, they do right. nothing but stab in the
yeah.
back.
Germany See, was absolutely stabbed in the back.
If you're a friend of the Jew, if you think that you're, as a nation in America, that we have brought them in here and we are their greatest ally.
Yeah.
Yeah. You heard the quotes I've read from Netanyahu. Yep. You've heard what they've said. We don't care if America dries up and blows away.
Right.
They don't care about us.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
care about the blacks. They don't care about anybody but themselves. And believe me, they don't even like themselves very much. So the stab in the back is definitely, there was a poem I read about that. There was a famous poem back in that time oh, okay. about the stab in the back.
Oh, maybe you could dig that
may
up.
May I say I this now? That. May I yeah. show you this?
Go ahead.
Wait till you get a load of this. Now, I want to make sure that you know that the UN was founded on October 24th, 1945. 2 and 4 is 6, by the way. Uh-huh. October being the 10th, so that's 16. But anyway, right? Success, New York, Lake Success, New York, it's called.
Okay.
So that's, it was founded on, and this is, it was, it's in a building that was dedicated by the Rogenfelders or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
Rogenfellers and the Jews. And it was on a pig factory, a slaughter, pig slaughter factory.
Wow.
Which is apropos when you say.
Right? Yes.
Okay. Now listen to this. This is the beginning of the Treaty of Versailles. Part 1, the Covenant of the League of Nations. What? The high contracting parties, in order to promote international cooperation and to achieve international peace and security by the acceptance of obligations not to resort to war, by the prescription of open, just and honorable relations between nations, by the firm establishment of the understandings of the international law,
yeah,
as the actual rule of conduct among governments, and by the maintenance of justice and scrupulous respect of all treaty obligations in the dealings of organized people with one another, agree to this covenant of the League of Nations.
Right.
This is part of the Versailles Treaty. They were trying to institute, and I suppose somehow did institute it.
Well, to an extent,
It
lasted a few years.
You understand what I'm saying? I didn't know this was in here.
Right. Yeah, I didn't either. I've never read the Treaty of Versailles.
Article 1, the original members of the League of Nations shall be those of the signatories, which are named in the annex to this covenant, and also such of the other states named in the annex as shall accede without reservation to this covenant. Such accession shall be effected by the declaration deposited with the Secretariat within 2 months of the coming into force of the covenant. Notice, therefore, shall be sent to all the other members of the League.
Right.
This is the UN, okay? They're announcing the UN. Now, I want to explain something quickly before we go on here. 1815, Congress of Vienna. The League of Nations was to be started. The Tsar,
yes,
had torpedoed this. Remember?
Yeah.
And then Rockefeller said, "I will get the Tsar and his family."
Right, a Rothschild rather.
Tsar and his family. So they got the Tsar and his family in 1917. This is 1919. Right. Now they're establishing the League of Nations. They got rid of the Tsar.
That's right.
Now, this wasn't the Tsar he was talking to in 1815. It was his predecessor.
Sure, right. Yeah.
Okay? So it didn't matter if they had to wait 102 years to get the revenge.
Well, because the Jews have a multi-generational campaign of genocide against the white race. They never stop. Okay? And it's just our people have no idea that the Jews are so evil that they would never cease to attack the white race, especially white Christians, until they can finally slaughter us all. And that's all that Judaism is about, is destroying the white race. Okay?
Right.
And
notice that this is international.
Yes.
We know who the internationalists are.
Yes. They're invariably Jews.
They are who they've always been.
Yeah.
They're the seed line of Cain, who has no country of their own. They're wanderers and vagabonds.
That's right.
They're not allowed to have a country of their own.
Yeah.
So they'd have to be internationalists.
Well,
they'd have to be part of all nations because they cannot have a nation of their own.
Okay. One of the reasons why the Jews wanted Palestine and created the Zionist movement is to remove the stigma that they are a nation without a people without a nation. Okay? They want to get rid of
that. Have they?
No, they haven't. They haven't succeeded yet. Okay? But that was one of the reasons for Zionism, is to get rid of that stigma. Okay? Well, now we have a nation of our own, and we'll make our Jerusalem our capital again, and we'll start having sacrifices in the temple. Right?
That's not working.
That's been the Jewish plan all along. Okay? But one more thing here, one more topic I want to cover, if we may or may not have time to get to the hyperinflation. If not today, we can do it next time because it'll be germane to the rise of Hitler. But this is a Dark Moon site, www.darkmoon.me, the sexual decadence of Weimar Germany. Because, you know, whenever the Jews rule a country, they institute sexual decadence like crazy everywhere. Okay, they're doing it. And by the way, folks, you should see that the Jews are doing this to America right now. No account of the Jewish question in Germany can be complete without some mention of the tidal wave of sexual immorality that was to engulf the country during the period of the Weimar Republic, 1919 to 1933, following World War I. This also happened to be the apogee or the height of Jewish power in Germany. Every single sphere of major influence had now fallen under Jewish control. 1. The cultural takeover of Germany by the Jews. Dr. Karl Wiehe, in his Germany and the Jewish Question, in is painstaking in the details he provides. Quote, well before 1933, the Jews had taken possession of the film industry even more thoroughly than that of the theater. That was understandable because, well, they did the same thing here in America, didn't they, David? They were taking control Absolutely. Of America at the same time. That was understandable.
They were bringing Negroes into the Weimar Republic as well, just to let you know.
Okay. That was understandable because the earnings in the film industry overshadow the earnings of any other artistic activity. The biggest step in the direction of the decline of German cultural life was taken in the field in the light entertainment genre. Here, in the genre of musical comedy and above all in revue and burlesque, frivolity and lasciviousness were to rear their ugly heads, that is, prostitution. So much so that poor white German girls who had no food, had no money, were forced into prostitution. So much so that during these years, Berlin was quite correctly considered the most immoral city in the world, under Jewish control, of course.
Anywhere the Jews are, they're the most immoral. Now, they were promoting gays here and transsexuals and all kinds of things and Negroes, right?
Yes.
Now, they're in control of that. They're kind of in control of that little land over there. And what is Tel Aviv known as today?
Yeah,
the gay capital of the world.
Right, yeah, the cesspool of Grand. Right?
Yeah. You can see these pictures of that you're seeing in this article. You see the faggot right there?
Okay, I haven't gotten there, but yeah.
There's a man.
Oh, yeah, there wasn't any.
Right there, a faggot. The article you just posted.
Right, yeah.
The sexual decadence of Weimar Germany.
Yeah.
There's faggots and all kinds of things right here. You
right.
know what I mean? Little flamers and stuff,
Right.
With their little pink puffed up stuff and everything.
But I'm just looking at the text right now. Yeah, it's just one of the drawings of Weimar Germany and the cultural depravity, the Jewish cultural depravity of Weimar Germany. It was Jews who introduced this pornographic art form to Germany, a debased genre completely unknown before the Great War. And so it is the Jews who can be held responsible for the general decline of morals. So what else is new, folks? The Jewish sexologist Ivan Bloch and Magnus Hirschfeld became the representatives of sex research camouflaged as science, a bogus science that was merely an excuse for pornography and propaganda designed to destroy the institution of marriage and the sanctity of the family. Couldn't agree more.
Unbelievable.
Couldn't agree more. So I'm now looking at the picture and there's all these really naked women sitting around in a bar, right? Which is
I see that, but I'm talking about above. Look above. There's a queer right there.
Oh, okay,
in the middle picture.
Oh, I see. Yeah, is that a queer?
Yeah.
I thought that was a peacock.
That's exactly what that is. I mean, that looks like no woman I've ever met.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
How about this from the same article? Here are some of their depressing titles. These are the books now that Hitler was burning while they are telling America that they were burning good things so that the Germans couldn't learn any good things, right?
Right, like
Jewish
pornography. Yeah.
Wheel reels off a long list of Jewish sexologists who he claims were in the forefront of writing such salacious treaties that were no more than pornography masquerading as science.
Right.
Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld and Ivan Bloch were the star writers in this field. Their books still read avidly today by a gullible public hungry for details of the bizarre, the kinky, and the perverse. Dr. Ludwig Louis Lenz, Leo Schitzritz, Franz Rabinowitz, George Cohen, and Albert Eulenberg are some of the names we mentions. Okay, here are some of their depressing titles. Sittengensich,
let me read the German. Let me read the German. Where are you at exactly? And you can read the English.
I'm down here where Otto Dix, the salon number 21.
Okay.
It's just a little further down in the thing.
Okay.
They were writing things about masturbatory fantasies, thrilling adventure stories involving necrophilia, bestiality, and handkerchief fetishism, and things like that. Now, Wheel reels off. There's a picture down there. You see these women in the bar?
Right.
Okay, and it says Otto Dix.
Right.
Okay, 1921. Well, I'm reading right here. Here are some of the depressing titles.
Okay.
Sittengensich de Lasters, The History of Perversions. Sittengensich de Schamengloßigkeit. See what where I am?
So more
the history of shamelessness.
Yeah, right. I'm not seeing what you're reading. I'm seeing a bunch of other titles, but not the ones you're reading. But here, let me read some here. A glance at the review titles is again sufficient. Zieh dich aus, which means get undressed. Tausend nackte Frauen, 1,000 naked women. Die Sünden der Welt, the sins of the world. Häuser der Liebe, the houses of love. Obviously, the houses of prostitution.
Oh, I'm a little down from there, right?
Oh, okay, you're further down. Okay.
I'm right down where that picture is. There's a picture down
okay.
there.
Okay, all right, I see. Oh, yeah, and it's more prostitutes of all various ages. It's very fascinating. Okay, here are some of their depressing titles. I'll read the German, you read the English. Sitten geistliche des Lasters.
The history of perversions.
Sitten geistliche des Schamlustigkeit.
The history of shamelessness.
Yes, that's the history of the Jews, folks. Shamelessness. Bild der Lexikon der Erotik.
Picture lexicon of eroticism.
Sittengeschichte des Geheime und Verbotene.
The history of the secret and forbidden.
Yeah, I mean, this is all titillation, folks. All total titillation.
These are the books that Hitler was burning.
Right.
These are the books, ladies and gentlemen.
That horrible man. Hitler, that horrible man. So he was burning pornography.
And he was burning the communist peoples. You know, when these commies are writing in their nation and they're writing these books like Saul Alinsky. I'm reading Saul Alinsky's book right now, Rules for Radicals.
Right.
And stay tuned to my show this week because I'm going to really show you some things about Saul Alinsky's book. You must read this book.
Yes.
You must read this book, and then you'll understand. You'll be saying, why is Obama, and even though I don't want to mention his name ever again, I'm sorry I have to even mention
right,
it.
Right.
But you know that was his favorite book. You know that it was Hillary's favorite book, right?
Yes.
Not to mention Bill Clinton and everybody else. All these people that seem to be getting at the top of politics are somebody. Wait till I show you what's in this book, Eli. You're going to freak out.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are proteges of Saul Alinsky, another Jew communist, right?
Did you know that I'm going to just tell you this, that the Catholic Church, when they had their people graduating from the seminary and things like that in the Catholic Church, they sent them each and every one of them to see Saul Alinsky to get advice.
Yeah. Right?
You're going to freak out. I'm telling you.
I told that man is very powerful. Again. Right. He's a very powerful man.
Why would they send them to Saul Alinsky? Why would the Catholic Church send them to Saul Alinsky to get advice? I mean, you answer that question, dear listener.
Because the Jews control the Catholic Church, too. That's why. Right?
But because it's communist. They're communism.
That's right.
That church is communist.
It is. And it's integrationist. And it's anti-Christian is what it really is. Okay? You can call it what you want. Catholic Church is not Christian. It's Jewish and it's communist. That's what the Catholic Church
is. So back to these books for a couple of seconds, if we don't mind.
No, go ahead.
There are some of the titles published by Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld's Institute of Sexual Science in Berlin. Aphrodisiacs, prostitution, sexual catastrophes, sexual pathology. The Perverted.
Right.
We describes all of these books as filthy publications of the pseudoscientists. You see how the Pharisees were scientists?
Right.
Remember
exactly.
I told you that? They wanted to see proof from Yeshua.
They always
wanted to see a sign.
They were pseudo-Levites. They were pseudo-Levites. Right?
Yes.
That's what they were.
And he was calling them out for it, too.
That's right.
So in other words, these books were allegedly supposed to be scientific treatises. Mm-hmm. Their ostensible purpose of being to educate the broad masses about the dangers. What a lie about the dangers. It was to entice them into it.
Right.
Of the sexual excesses. Under the guise of science, however, they speculated in the lust of lower instincts of their audience. Criminals, prostitutes, homosexuals took center stage in their repertoire. One looks in vain for any known non-Jewish sexual scientist.
Right.
We point that his name is W-I-E-H-T.
Yeah, it's Via. Via in German. Yeah, Via.
Via?
Yes.
Okay, Via points out that masturbation, hitherto a hole-in-the-corner vice, began to be shamelessly promoted for the first time in the Weimar Germany, in Weimar Germany, by Jewish-run organizations. He mentions that Dr. Max Hodan, Jewish medical officer for Berlin, and ticks him off for circulating a booklet recommending regular masturbation for the worst in working classes. Let me make mention right now. You see that? How's that's done? They're teaching this to children in preschool
now in
America.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So if you Americans listening aren't realizing that the Jews are doing to America exactly what they did to Germany during the Weimar Republic, then you don't know what's going on.
They're trying to set up the very same scenario here.
Exactly.
They just have to do it more slowly.
Like
the difference between the Russian Revolution, this German thing, they're doing to Germany exactly what they did to America, what they did to Germany. But this time, in the Russian Revolutions, they left the article from the French Revolution out. What do you call them? Where they cut the head off the
The guillotine. Yeah.
The guillotine. Right. Those guillotines are in America, ladies and gentlemen,
right,
waiting for you.
That's right, waiting for you.
So they skipped
if you
out
object
of the
to the Noahide laws, if you object to the Noahide laws, which are Jewish laws, it's under George Bush the first, that law was passed, and the Jews have the right in our Congress, in our government, to execute those people who are guilty of idolatry, which means that you believe that Jesus Christ is God.
Right, and Daddy Bush is a Jew. That's been proven.
That's right.
So is his son. You can see Bush has that curly hair and the crab eyes
right,
that these Jews have. Not all of them are like that, but you can tell that they are Jews. It's very easy to tell. But notice that the French Revolution, the main catalyst was the guillotine.
Yes.
Then they left it out of the Weimar Republic. They left it out of the Bolshevik Revolution. But now they have it here again now, because they didn't want it to be so evident that whoever conducted the French Revolution was also who conducted the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes.
See? So they left the guillotine out of that. But now the guillotine is here and ready for you and I today.
Yes. It continues here. It is worth noting that one of the world's worst serial killers, Peter Curtin, committed all his crimes in Germany during the 1925-1930 period. This was, of course, the heyday of the Weimar Republic, when the German people lay completely under Jewish domination, and when the first dress rehearsal for the later sexual revolution of the 1960s was arguably being run. 100% agree with that statement. Significantly, when asked what his primary motive for murder was, Curtin replied, to strike back at an oppressive society. I guess that's the same reason that blacks have for burning down their neighborhoods in black communities, and for these libtard feminists for accusing the white man of a culture of rape when it's Jews who are doing it.
Yes, and notice that the sexual revolution wasn't it the summer of 69?
Yes, I think so. Right.
Isn't that the yin and yang? You know what I mean? 69?
Yeah, right. Yeah, these numbers mean so much to them, the Freemasons and the Jews. You know, it's in many cases just a joke. They just pick these dates as a joke, but sometimes they're very serious and they consult numerology and they consult, astrologers and other soothsayers, the dates they choose.
Make no mistake that was a revolution in itself.
Oh,
that
absolutely
wasn't the kind of revolution where you kill. This was an opposite revolution. This revolution was to revolt and to divide, here it is again, to divide the family, to divide the generation of the father and mother and the grandfather and everything from the children. They wanted to divide that generation of children from their parents.
And
in other words, you're square. Your ways are the old ways,
straight,
man.
You're straight. You're square. You're old fuddy-duddy. You don't have any sexually transmitted diseases. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, okay. And what I was going to say, I just lost it. But in other words, what it is that it's the same thing as the Bible is today. Oh, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Now, I'll translate that to the verbiage. Do your own thing, man.
Yeah, exactly. Do your own thing.
Do you know that I just watched a Jackie Gleason thing? I wanted to mention this to people. And I got to tell you, I love Jackie Gleason and everything. But I watched this. It was something I watched on YouTube, and it was about his legacy and his life. And you had Larry King and all these Jews on there saying all these things about Jackie Gleason. Okay. And really, when you look at Jackie Gleason's life, he was a man that wanted attention.
Right.
He was a man that left his family in the dust. Everything had to do with what he wanted to do. He did everything he wanted
very
to
ambitious.
Do.
Very
he
ambitious.
Did.
Yeah.
And what these Jews kept saying is, this guy was the kind of guy that did his own thing.
Right. Right. Yeah.
This is why
he's
such a
great
man.
So is Karl Marx. He abandoned his family.
Do you understand what they're trying to say to him?
Sure.
They're trying to make a hero out of a tragedy.
Right.
A man's life which is an actual tragedy. Oh, you can like his work. I love Jackie Gleason's work. He's funny and all that stuff. But when you realize that he dissed his family, he had no regard for Yahweh whatsoever.
Right.
And these Jews are praising him up and down because Jackie did his own thing. He didn't let anybody tell him what to do. He did his own thing. Now, where do you think Jackie's going to end up?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So what these Jews were doing, see, you don't realize it was all Jews talking on the thing, too. And they were all saying Milton Berle was one of them.
Right.
And he was like praising him up and down because he did his own thing. He didn't obey any laws of anybody else. He did his own thing. And he did what he wanted to do. And what the message is, you don't even realize what these Jews are doing to you. They're telling you if you do your own thing, you're a hero.
Yes.
You're going to lose everything if you do your own thing, man.
Yeah. Okay, folks. Well, first of all, let me just say that since the German men and the German women were poor and didn't have jobs, it was primarily Jewish men and foreigners who came to Berlin to be serviced by all these prostitutes. Okay? Arriving in Berlin during the hyperinflation crisis in 1923, Klaus Mann, son of the great German novelist Thomas Mann, remembered walking past a group of dominatrices. Quote, some of them looked like fierce Amazons, strutting in high boots made of green, glossy leather. We got this action going again today, folks. One of them brandished a supple cane and leered at me as I passed by. Good evening, madam, I said. She whispered in my ear, want to be my slave? Costs only $6 billion in a cigarette. Man, that's an expensive hoe. A real expensive hoe. $6 billion. Probably the cigarette was worth $500 million. Right?
You know what I like is how I take it off course and you keep bringing it back on course. That's what on this particular show, it seems. I love it. I really do. But go ahead.
But children as young as 10 years of age turned tricks at railway stations. A group of 14-year-old Russian girls, refugees from the Red Terror in Stalin's communist slaughterhouse, managed to make a lucrative living in Berlin as dominatrices. Russian women, right? Dominatrices. Little girls were freely available for sex not only in child brothels and pharmacies, but could be ordered by telephone. And delivered to
and
clients
who were the
by
pharmacists?
Text. Yeah, there you go.
Do you remember? The reason why I remember that is because remember that thing that we read one time about the Jews from Constantinople, and they said in Moses' name, they told them to become doctors and apothecaries and to become bankers and to become the press and all that stuff. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's
you see,
amazing.
They became, this is the same thing. What is happening in California today?
Yeah.
They just legalized child prostitution.
That's right.
What's different? How is this any different?
Yeah, that's what happens when
Pizzagate?
Jews take over.
10-year-old girls.
Yeah.
10-year-old girls working in sex brothels. Whether it's a pharmacy or clients by taxi or Pizzagate, it's the same old stuff. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
But California, Hollywood has been the world capital of Jewish prostitution since the early days, you know, since the 1920s. Right? We could get into
what happened to Shirley Temple? Yeah, remember what she told you in her book, that even her mother was in one of the one of the Jew's offices, and she was in the other, and he tried to lock her in the room.
Wow.
I mean, I've got her book, and it's worth reading. And, you know, it proves that these Jews are perverts.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Now look how young Shirley Temple was, and this guy's trying to, this Jew, I mean, this is a famous one, you know, like.
They have the same type of lust. It just hit me, David, to have the same type of lust for our women as the fallen angels had for our women 6,000 years ago.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, that's what's going on, folks.
Not? Our women are the real deal. It's like when you look at our women and then you look at the fake Jewish women, remember what the guy, Mr. Jacobs, said about it, that they look like the Jewish women look, when they try to look like our women, like toilet sales people, right. You know what I mean? They're ostentatious. They're not the real thing. You can tell they're not the real thing.
Right.
You look at Barbra Streisand or whatever, and you see her blonde hair. She's not blonde.
No.
And you see that she might have green eyes. She doesn't have green eyes. That's all to try to make her look like us, but they don't compare. Right. They're not even in the same league.
That's right. That's right. They even had they had different words for different levels of prostitutes. That's how common prostitution was in Germany. Control girls, legal prostitutes checked for venereal disease. Half silks, part-time amateurs with day jobs as office workers, secretaries, and shop girls. Evening and weekend workers, all right, so they're part-time prostitutes. Grasshoppers, lowly streetwalkers who gave hand jobs and stand-up sex in dark alleys. Nuts, or nutes. Boyish teenage girls who worked for pocket money after school without their parents' knowledge. Boot girls, dominas or dominatrices in shiny patent leather boots who offered to stamp all over their clients. Oh, yeah, I want that. Yeah, I want that.
Oh, what do you remember that from? I got these boots, and I'm going to walk.
Boots are
all
made for walking,
you.
Right.
That's Nancy Sinatra.
Oh, yeah, and what about that flat-chested model in Britain? Twiggy, right? They were bringing the boyish look back, okay? Definitely the transsexual look. The early days of transsexualism. Twiggy. That's why they brought Twiggy in. The Tauentzian girls. Chic mother and daughter teams.
Oh,
wow. Munsies. Heavily pregnant women who waited under lampposts. Gravel stones. Hideous hags with missing limbs. Oh, that was Bill Clinton's favorite.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. The most common German word for them was Kies. In other accounts, they referred to as Steinhorn or Stone Horse. That's just outdoor prostitutes. We have a few minutes left. Indoor prostitutes. Kontes, low-grade Jewish prostitutes. Mostly Polish.
Kontes?
Yes, right?
Sounds like a bad word.
That's right, right. Who picked up their clients in railway stations. Fosses. French argot for vaginas, elegant females who discreetly advertised in magazines and newspapers as private masseuses and manicurists. Demicastors, or half beavers, young women from good families who worked in high-class houses. And so these are your indoor prostitutes. Table ladies, ravishingly beautiful escorts of exotic appearance who came with the reserved table in an exclusive nightclub. Folks, all of these things are going on in America today. And it's run by you-know-who.
Yeah, and this is what you get when you have Jews in your nation. This is what they do for you.
Yes.
So we see one thing I want to remind you before we go, that the Treaty of Versailles is actually, in guise, the setting up of the League of Nations.
Yes, that's right.
I'm serious. You got to go read it yourself. The first amendments are setting up this League of Nations.
That's right. And that's a good point, because it was a two-pronged treaty. Number one was to continue their thrust toward one world government, which they thought they had accomplished with the Treaty of Versailles. And number two, to punish Germany for crimes the Germans never committed. Okay? That was the whole point of the Treaty of Versailles, and the Jews came out the victors. As many people have said, wars are the Jews' harvest. And all wars have been won by the Jews since 1815.
I have to say, this is a disgusting article you've come up with here. I mean, this shows me
the depravity of the Jews.
I think we ought to start on this again next week before we go on, because it's so crazy is what it is.
But it's exactly what's happening in America today.
To anybody.
It's exactly what's happening where Jews rule. It's everywhere, folks. This is what's going on. The world pedophilia scandal that the Jew press won't cover. Right? Because the Jews are too much involved in it. That's why the Jew press won't cover it. Yeah, I mean, this is actually a presage of the future, folks. When Jews take over the world, this is what's going to happen. It's coming to a neighborhood near you, folks, if you don't do something about this. Okay, David, thanks for being my co-host. I hope the listening audience understands the depravity of the Jew and what the Jew will do to you if you let them. All right, folks? Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.
Praise Yahweh.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you've got to be